This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Going on right now, I'm talking with Matt from Exhumed. They have a brand new record called To the Dead out now on Relapse Records. They're going to be playing tonight. If you're listening to this on the day of release, they are going to be playing tonight, November 11th at the Substation. Great venue. Got to see them there. I think it was like a few months before the pandemic started with Gatecreeper. And
right.
You guys are coming back. Welcome back to Seattle. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great, man. Very excited to have the record out and, you know, have that whole two-year stretch in the rearview mirror, more or less. And stoked to be coming back to Seattle, man. It's always a good time up there.
Yeah.
It should be a good time.
Right on, man. Well, okay, so yeah, how did the pandemic treat you, man? Like, you guys came out with a record, so obviously you guys stayed busy. Like, how did you stay sane during that time where it's probably the longest time you weren't on the road in your adult life? Is that right?
Yeah. It was a bit weird, you know, like, we talk about it now, you know, with my wife or my friends or whatever. And it's like I kind of look back actually quite fondly on the first couple months, mm-hmm. you know, because nobody was working. It was just like, I live in California. So,
yep.
And I live like in a kind of small townish area. So, yeah. And with lots of nature. And so I would just take the dog out for 3 hours on a hike, you know, mm-hmm. and just have fun. And, you know, we were like cooking every meal together. And that was kind of nice. And then, you know, after about 2 months, it was like, okay. Is this it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we worked on the record, you know, the Exhumed record's been in the can since last summer.
Yeah.
And we started recording it last April. So that was a big help, you know, and sort of staying busy and giving us something to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
We did like an internet show,
yeah.
With Exhumed. We did a couple of like live streams where I got some like independent horror movies and did some music videos and, you know, did that on our YouTube channel.
Yep.
And I wrote a bunch of music, not necessarily for Exhumed, but uh-huh. also for Exhumed. And, you know, and then I was able to work, you know, pretty consistently, which I was very grateful for.
Yeah.
And, you know, all in all, I really don't have a lot to complain about. There was some uncertainty, there was some isolation, but, you know, being in a state where you can be outside year round,
yeah.
it didn't take long for people to figure out how to, you know, how to do things safe and outside where you could still go and, you know, see people from across a table or whatever and like have a beer somewhere and stuff. So it was, you know, it was weird. I'm glad it's over. The main thing is I'm just glad we're able to tour at will, and you know, hopefully this is a once every 100 year kind of thing, just like with the Spanish flu,
right?
Started in 1919, and And I've done my time, and I'm good, hopefully.
Hopefully, right? Yeah, knock on wood, man. So
right.
That is one thing consistently, you know, I've interviewed so many bands, and so many bands at the level of like success, but like an underground level. There's always seems to be, whether you have like a normal day job or a side hustle or something, like what do you do that's the like non-metal thing, if you don't mind talking about it?
No, not at all. I've been working for a company called Bartolini Electronics that makes primarily jazz bass pickups. It's like our specialty, but we do guitar and bass pickups, all electronics, preamps. We make like a really good cello preamp. I will say, like, I've been sort of dwindling, you know, as things have resumed, and I'm now kind of just like an independent side contractor for them.
Okay.
Which has been really nice and even more flexible.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also in a little bit different position that I play in multiple bands.
Yeah.
So I'm able to sort of cobble together some kind of, you know, acceptable living where my wife doesn't kick me out of the house.
Yeah.
Level of success.
I hear you, man. You know. I'm sort of actually in the similar like lane as far as my day job. I took a break to do this interview from my day job. I work in a company that makes harps and hammer dulcimers.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I handle
that's
the
so
shipping
cool.
for them, so it's not exactly metal world, but at least it's music related and
right.
It's a good company. So
harps are fantastic instruments. Hammer dulcimers are really specific.
Yep.
They're beautiful, but they're really specific. But a harp, I mean, come on, the harps are fucking tight, man.
Right? Yeah, and I mean, it's a niche, but we're the best of the niche. That's what I tell people. They're like, is that a viability like career? And I'm like, well, I mean, we've remain strong, and so, you know, I don't know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Have you noticed anything different, you know, since, you know, so you guys were out on the road, and then the pandemic hits, and then you've done some touring on the way. I actually saw you last year, I believe it was with Bewitcher.
At El Corazon, yeah.
Yeah, at El Corazon. So have you guys noticed a difference in, like, you know, are people more apprehensive to come out? Is there a lot more exuberance to come out? Have you noticed any difference at post-pandemic or quote-unquote post-pandemic?
I mean, I guess, you know, really, I'm assuming this tour is just going to be like a regular tour, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just started. So, but the tour that we did last year, you know, people were really exuberant. And it was a great time to tour because, you know, right now there's, you know, ever since basically the end of summer, how many big tours have there been? Mm-hmm. Like there's, because everybody's been chomping at the bit to get back out. So there's so much competition, and it's, you know, it's gone from famine to feast.
Yep.
You know,
embarrassment of riches.
Right. And so, but also, you know, with the inflation and everything, it's tough for kids to allocate. And when I say kids, I just mean concert goers.
Yep.
I recognize a lot of our audience are far from kids anymore, but, you know, it's just that it's tough to allocate the money that, you know, when it's like Merciful Fate display, and that was like $150. That is crazy.
Yep.
You know, so it's kind of, you know, we delayed the tour a little bit, which is going to be less pleasant for us being out in December, you know, in terms of the elements, but trying to let some of that competition thin out a little bit so we can, so that hopefully more people that want to come will be, you know, we'll have less reasons to not come, you know. But really, it as far as the apprehension, it really depended, and it was very predictable as far as where it depended. You know, it was really tied up in sort of regional perception of politics versus public health.
Yeah.
And, you know, we sort of avoided going places like, you know, Florida, Georgia, any place, you know, below the Mason-Dixon line, because we just felt that there was going to be such a likelihood of people that weren't vaccinated that could get somebody sick and cause the tour to lose dates, you know. And, you know, I think really we lucked out, but, you know, hopefully that helped. Hopefully that made it easier to luck out because nobody, we just got regular tour sick, you know.
Yes.
Nobody actually got COVID. So.
Wait, man, that's great. So one thing that I wanted to kind of mention, I've interviewed you in the past, but I don't think I've actually asked about this. So something that I love is I'm a huge fan of Eric Andre. You guys you guys have like this now viral like moment where you guys got to play with the Supremes on the Eric Andre show. Take me back to that day, and how did that come about, and what was that experience like?
Basically, Eric Andre wanted Pig Destroyer, and they couldn't do it because of logistics.
Yeah.
So, like many things that have happened to me in the course of my quote unquote career doing this, it was just like, well, I guess, hey man, I'm not, you know, too proud to take the second pick. And so I just said yes. And then I started talking to the band. I was like, are you going to be here? Are you going to be? And a bunch of people were not there. So we had like our old drummer that had played with us a few years back playing drums.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of a ramshackle thing. I just felt like TV, you know, how often does a band like us get a chance to be on TV? Like, never. So we kind of, you know, figured out how to make it happen. And then we went down there, and actually the day that we were there, you know, I've never been it's the first and last time we've done a TV thing. And I've never been in a television green room. Usually we're at like a club, you know, where they're like, well, you know, we don't want to give you everything on your rider because it's a lot of money. And here we went in there and it was just like, oh my God, there's like infinite food and drink. And we proceeded to, view that as a challenge. And our bass player, our old bass player, I don't think I'm throwing him under the bus because he would probably freely admit it and not care. But he was just obnoxiously trashed. And like he was just wandering around the building and like, you know, that's actually that show is what caused him to get fired from the band. So the day itself was not super fun because I spent a lot of it wrangling him.
Mm-hmm.
But the Eric and Hannibal were lovely, even though we were complete heads, like just, you know, because, you know, he was drunk. So I was trying to deal with that. So I ended up getting drunk as well. And it was just, you know, beyond the normal realm of like, hey, we're a fun rock band partying. I was like, oh, and they were very gracious and really nice to us, despite the fact that we probably did not deserve it.
Sure.
And we got through the performance, and so I went back and I called Mike, our drummer, like the next day, and I was like, dude, so yeah, like Rob's not going to be our bass player anymore because like you don't know what I just endured and how humiliating it was. And so, yeah, so it was a very bittersweet thing. But at the end of the day, Eric Andre is f-ing hilarious, and we got to be on TV, which I never in a million years even contemplated as a possibility. So I guess for me personally it was like a very frustrating experience, but it's a great sort of feather in the cap, and it's, you know, hopefully a humorous story. I can laugh about it now. For like that's a couple good. Years after, I was just like, oh God, don't mention that horrible day. Now I'm just like, ah,
I'm just glad I didn't bring it up right after shit. You would have been like triggered and just like, no, this interview is over, sir.
No, I wouldn't have taken that on you. I just would have been like, please, like, let's talk about anything else.
I mean, it's fitting that you guys played because, like, someone described it, and I thought it was so perfect. They described Eric Andre's style as the grindcore of comedy.
Yes, short bursts that sort of leave you going like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
Totally. Absolutely, man. And dude, insane. So that it's also kind of funny because there's that you know, fable that for Ace Ventura, Cannibal Corpse wasn't the first pick. It was like Napalm Death or whatever, and they weren't available, and so Cannibal Corpse got it. And so it's like, hey, along those lines, you know, you might not have been the first pick, but you got that minute, dude.
Right, but we're the ones that did it. I mean, it's like, you know, honestly, that's how I got like the Death to All gig, was Stefan from Obscura couldn't do it, and that's then led to Gruesome and Left to Die and all this shit.
Yep.
And that's how I ended up getting the being in Repulsion as well.
Yes. Just don't say no. Just sure, let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah, always say yes.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so I'm curious about, you know, you were mentioning some of your some of the obscure horror films that you did kind of on a stream. Now, I'm definitely throwing this out there, you know, just like throwing it out there. No preparation for this question, but what are some of your favorite horror films?
I got them. Yeah,
this one back.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Sorry.
It's all good.
You know, a lot of the horror stuff, I always feel kind of bad because I feel like I've given the same answer in my, for like decades. And I'm like, I probably should be watching more new movies so that I can change the answer. But, you know, I love, like, all the Fulci and Argento stuff from the early 80s, late 70s. You know, Suspiria, City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, Zombie 2, of course, the Romero, you know, Day, Dawn, Night.
Yep.
You know, all the first couple of Texas Chainsaws, the first couple of Evil Deads, Reanimator, From Beyond, Hellraiser 1 and 2, you know, all these things that really, you know, were kind of formative as a young Turk.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that really informs, you know, the band and the show and the album covers and the shirts and everything else. Like, that sensibility has kind of remained the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that I don't watch any newer movies. I do sometimes, but, they just have a different vibe, you know, even the ones that I think they're quite good. They just have a different vibe. I mean, I also like artsy stuff like Eraserhead or like Begotten and stuff like that. But really it's just a sort of, kind of those schlocky 70s, 80s, really gory movies with, you know, maximum dismemberment and cannibalism and all that good stuff, you know.
Have you had a chance to watch Barbarian yet?
I did watch Barbarian. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really cool. And, you know, it was just enough of a sort of misdirection to, like, really work.
Yep.
Even though you're like, well, clearly it can't be that easy, but you, like, end up getting surprised anyway. And,
totally. And
it was just a fun movie with good pacing and, and, you know, it was some good scares and it was cool. I'd heard people talking about it and then I saw it on HBO Max and I was like, all right.
Let's go.
So, yeah. Why not? I got beer in the house. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So you guys are, you know, just around the time that I saw you last time in 2019 or the last time at Substation was right around Thanksgiving as well. how do you guys celebrate, you know, if you guys are out during Christmas or Thanksgiving or something, do you guys take a day off and just like, you know, go get some fast food? Or how do you guys celebrate a holiday on the road, Exhumed style?
Well, for Thanksgiving, you know, it just depends sort of where you are regionally in the country. Our go-to, just due to geographical necessity, has been Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
Because it's not that good, you know, good old down-home, basic-ass American bullshit food.
Yeah.
This year, we're going to be between Pittsburgh and Boston.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly where we go. But, you know,
Boston
we'll definitely
market.
Take time. Yeah, no. Like, we're going to go someplace where you can, like, you know, sit down.
Sure.
You know, and it's just like a little, you know, it's like a Friendsgiving or whatever. And, you know, we'll just spring for a big meal. We did actually on that tour with Gatekeeper and Necrot.
Uh-huh.
It's probably the best tour Thanksgiving we ever did. Necrot's driver and merch guy was a cook.
Oh, cool.
And he's an Italian dude like Luca.
Yeah.
So we rented an Airbnb and both bands stayed there. And we, you know, dropped, you know, a few $100 at the grocery store. And we just had a feast.
That's awesome.
And it was great because, you know, with someone to cook, they're like, oh no, I'll do it. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just, you know, watch football that I don't care about and drink beer and eat amazing food.
That's so cool.
It was great. And that was Garfield. That was the peak.
That's awesome, man. Dude, you can't beat that, man. And that gives you like that like day of just like relaxation, and then you just go back out and hit the road, dude. That's dope.
Everybody, you know, you hopefully you have enough time to, like, you know, fart out the giant dinner and get rid of the hangover and then, you know, then go play a rock show. Be limber the next day.
Totally. So I have a totally out there question. So recently there's this band Turnstile. I just saw them pick up a Taco Bell commercial. So Turnstile song on a Taco Bell commercial. Somehow it's fitting. If you guys had your choice of any kind of product or brand that would fit well with Exhumed, what would you want an Exhumed song to represent?
I mean, probably like, you know, Steel Chainsaws, I guess, would be the no-brainer.
Okay.
either that or like Miller Lite or like Hams. You know, but I have a lot of mixed feelings about that kind of stuff. You know, on the one hand, you know, obviously, getting your music out in front of people is good, and getting paid for playing music is good. But on the other hand, you know, a business like Taco Bell, like, I remember there was like they had like a program a few years ago that our old booking agent told me about. He's like, yeah, if you sign up and, like, you know, I forget what you had to do. It was like some sort of social media thing and get like X amount of Taco Bell for free a year on tour.
Yeah.
And this and that. And I was like, I'm not going to promote Taco Bell on social media. Like, I'm not. That's like sleazy.
Yeah.
You know? And like, even now, like Relapse, you know, it was like, oh, we had this graphic for like the chart information on the new record. And I was like, I mean, I guess that's cool, but I didn't really, I posted it, but it made me feel uncomfortable. It's like, this is not what we're about. Like bragging about being on the Billboard or whatever. Like that's, this has nothing to do with death metal. It has nothing to do with why we do this. That said, I mean, I'm really super grateful for the support of the people that bought the record, and that is totally worth celebrating, but turning it into like a number thing and a Billboard thing to me is like, oh, I don't know, man. I just feel a little uncomfortable, but I did it anyway. But yeah, Taco Bell is a bridge too far.
But the chainsaws, man, once those come rolling, who knows?
Right, right. That there we go. Yeah. Something I really believe in.
So, I mean, like, that's one thing is, like, with our, like, constant, like, evolving, or not evolving, but, like, maybe even devolving, constant, just, like, everyone, just, like, attention span, that constantly, like, everyone needs to refresh their social media, et cetera, you know, and bands need to, quote, post content and all this stuff. Do you ever just get, like, overwhelmed and you're like, nah, just shut it down. I'm just going to walk away from this for a while. Do you ever get just overwhelmed by all that stuff?
I mean, I think what I've found is as I've become more diligent about using social media as a thing for the band and a way to, you know, obviously market to our fans, not to be gross, but I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But also to just, you know, engage. I mean, if somebody makes a meme about the band or whatever, like I always enjoy sharing that.
Sure.
Or just like, here's a picture of us rehearsing. Like, look, we're rehearsing. We're doing something.
Yeah.
You know, trying to be on top of that has made me just completely lose interest in using social media, like for personal purposes.
Sure.
You know, also like, I mean, I'm married, so it's like, I don't know, that takes away like 50% of the potential usefulness.
Yeah, you're not going to be hollering at girls in their DMs, you know?
Right. You know, so it's like, you know, every once in a while I feel like, oh, I missed like a message from a friend, or I missed something that was really funny or whatever. But it's like, I really just like beyond maybe like, wow, I've just like stopped using it recreationally.
Sure.
And you know, it's a great tool and I understand that. You know, that's the nature of what it is. But just living in that sort of promotional headspace is, I find, exhausting. Mm-hmm. And it's also really interesting to me because, you know, so much of marketing art before social media and everything else is that the person becomes the brand.
Yep.
The artist becomes the brand. You know, like the stories about Motley Crue are arguably, you know, more interesting than the music of Motley Crue.
Yeah.
But the stories about Motley Crue is what makes people buy the music, which is what makes them be able to do the stupid bullshit that makes the stories and so on and so forth. And
much like black metal, like early black metal, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing is, now that we've entered the age of social media, everybody is sort of creating their own brand all the time by choosing, or now the people would say curating, by choosing what pictures of themselves they're going to post, by choosing what experiences they choose to share with others. And then I think, you know, obviously we all do that, you know, social media notwithstanding. You know, I don't meet somebody for the first time until, you know, by the time I piss my pants and get so drunk. I don't lead with that. But the thing is that now that you're sort of, you're turning it into a numbers game of how many likes, how many shares, how many comments, and a corporation is profiting off you marketing yourself as a brand. You know, we've moved into like a new and sort of more dystopian era of capitalism where every single person, every human being is a product that is being constantly monetized. Not just for the products that they buy, like food, electricity, you know, whatever, but just for their life experience is a commodity that a corporation is profiting on. And it's very creepy, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this interview right here, it's going to go up online and it's click the link in bio to listen.
I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's, I like in a lot of ways, it's a natural outgrowth of the way human interaction has always been.
Yep.
But just the fact that somebody has commoditized, or I don't know if that's a word, has monetized human interaction. They're like, yep. Hey, you have friends. How can I get in the middle of that and make money? Because that's really what business is. They're like, this is the thing people are doing. I'm going to put myself in the middle of it. And then they're going to pay me.
Yeah. Tom from MySpace had the right idea. He cashed out and he goes traveling. So
he's good for him, like, man.
Get out of here. Yeah. So everyone's original friend, Tom from MySpace.
Tom. I have to imagine that there's going to be like a biopic or a documentary about him, like, you know, the next few years. Like, where is he now? What's he doing? You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, man. He got the bag and I'm pretty sure he just travels. Like, he's just over it. And I don't think he does social media, which is something, it says something in and of itself, you know? So.
Right. And that is a very important thing to look at. The people creating these technologies, like, look at how they feel about them by what they do and then what they allow their kids to do and so on and so forth. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know, man. I do like scrolling through Instagram and, like, seeing pictures of, you know, cool records and, like, cool comics and stuff. Like, it's like I said, in a time of defecation, it's a good way to pass that time.
But you got to disconnect a little bit of yourself. Exactly. So,
yes,
totally, man. So, you know, I'm not going to take up your whole time. You're on the road. Tonight you're going to be playing at Substation. Killer lineup. Holder could not make the tour work, but Escuela Grind is going to be playing, which is freaking awesome. Love that band.
And we're very psyched about adding it to the tour. And they deserve a huge amount of credit for stepping up at that. You know, at 11:59 and getting in there and, you know, just putting on their big boy pants and doing the whole tour, because it's a 5-week tour. So,
and they're just like, let's go.
Yep. I give them a lot of props.
That's awesome, man. So my last question for you, dude, pick a scar on your body and tell me the story of how you got the scar.
Let's see. I mean, not that I have so many, but I guess I have this weird little like kind of crescent moon scar on my middle finger knuckle on my right hand.
Okay.
And I was standing outside an old venue that's long since shut down, called the Berkeley Square in Berkeley, California, in, I want to say, 94, maybe.
Okay.
And it might have been 95, but it was 94, 95. I was waiting to see Incantation, Grave, and maybe Broken Hope.
Whoa.
I think.
That's a killer lineup.
And they had this like neon sign with a big like sheet of really thick glass outside it. And I was standing there talking to a friend of mine. I don't know, I'm not sure what we're talking about, probably whatever death metal opinions we had in 1994, 95. And I was just sort of waving my hands nonchalantly, like, you know, kind of enthusiastic. And probably at that time I was drinking, like, you know, Old English 800 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just managed to sort of swing my hand right by the corner of this glass plate in front of this neon sign. And it didn't even hurt. And all of a sudden, like, I was just bleeding like crazy.
Damn.
Like, just really, really bleeding a lot out of my hand. And I was like, how can it cut that I didn't even feel? Didn't hurt. It's not even deep. And I was just standing there like I had to, you know, like my buddy, I think, had to go across the street to Walgreens or down the street to a Walgreens or something and get like a roll of, you know, paper towels and like a bandage. And it turned into this whole thing. Anyway, you know, it didn't ruin the night, but it just was like, that's more memorable than the show at this point in the time because it was so random.
Damn, dude, that's brutal. And
I didn't get it by like punching anybody or doing anything cool. It was just, you know, being a dumb, clumsy idiot. So
1994 death metal opinions. You were probably either talking about how the new Cannibal Corpse vocalist is never going to make it, or at the gates, or just a flash in the pan. They're never going to have a hit album.
at the gates, I would never have said that about. But Cannibal Corpse, 100%. I was like, the guy from Monstrosity. Come on,
it's whatever, and, dude. Never gonna last.
And I've been proven so wrong because they've gone on to even surpass the early records.
Totally.
And George is such clearly the better singer.
Yes. But
yes, you know, I think back about some of the things I thought, and yeah, very, very wrong. I would never have made it as a pundit. Although I guess you don't have to be wrong. You just have to sound smart.
Exactly.
So maybe I would have been the best pundit.
There you go. Dude, thank you so much for taking the time, man. And we'll see you tonight at the substation, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it, man. Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.